You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, what's up? What's happening? I'm Captain Dean. Welcome back to another episode. My guest is a very talented guitarist, singer, songwriter, and has been active in the Bowling Green music scene for a pretty decent amount of time. He's been a guitarist in the band Mopie. He is an active solo artist, and he is currently the lead singer and rhythm guitarist, so to speak, of Mundane Nation, Sven Dugangia.
That's it, yeah.
I did it. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. We've talked a while back.
Yeah.
And we finally got around to getting this nailed down, and it was really last minute, but it worked out. So thanks for doing this again.
Well, thanks.
And like I said in the beginning, you have been active, but for a pretty short amount of time. How long have you been in this music scene, so to speak?
I want to say it dates back to like the teen jam days of at Wawa's.
Wawa.
Through the Kentucky Blues Society. The late, great Bobby Baldwin actually turned me on to going to those. And that was probably like 9 years ago now?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then...
Yeah, about 2009, 2010, something like that.
Yeah, it's almost 10 years ago then.
Yeah.
But then started playing with a couple of guys then. Kendrick Brent is one of the drummers that I played with, and he was in Dan Luke and the Raid now, and he was in a couple of different projects now. I can't keep track of all of them, but he's got a lot going on. And we started a band, and then later on we found Ben and Ed,
mm-hmm.
who are the current members of Mundane Nation, along with Justin.
Well, before we hop into all of that, let's get back to the very beginning. And with most of these, I start off with the question of where are you from, but in your case I'm going to turn out my Kentucky accent a little bit and do the you ain't from around here, are you?
No, my family's from Bosnia.
Yeah. Okay,
so they,
I guess with a name like Sven, people just instantly think someone is Swedish
or German. And the blonde hair and blue eyes don't help either, but you know, it turned out that way. My family is from Bosnia, and around the 90s, they had the big civil war thing happen in the former Yugoslavia.
And that's what brought you to America.
Yeah.
And what year was this?
Well,
you were born in what?
I was born in 96.
96.
They left Bosnia, I think, around 91 or 92. I can't remember now. I mean, I wasn't born, but then they moved to Germany for a while, and I was actually born there.
Oh, cool. Where at?
Bad Sackingen, Germany.
All right.
Yep.
Never been there.
Yeah. We lived in a town called Albrook, though, I think.
Wow.
At that time. And then we moved to Rockford, Illinois. A little bit outside of Chicago.
A little night and day difference there.
Didn't spend too much time there. Came down to Bowling Green.
Rockford, Illinois, home of Cheap Trick.
Yeah. But then, ever since then, I've been in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Interesting. So what brought your family to Bowling Green?
We had a bunch of family that had moved here,
mm-hmm.
because there was a refugee center, and we knew there was a community here that had similar backgrounds and similar people. So, along with the whole family thing, we wanted to move down here because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we just kind of stuck where we were, and we're like, all right, let's build something here.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's an interesting background, so to speak, but obviously you were very little. Do you have much memory of any memory of that?
I remember a little bit of Germany, but like barely.
And what? How old were you when the move happened?
Two and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was very young.
Very, very little.
Very young. Like little bits and pieces, like visuals and stuff, but you don't remember actual memories.
Yeah, you didn't walk around.
No. Didn't go see the world.
Oh, yeah, the food was great.
Yeah.
So when you, obviously, you're just rooted in, as an American, basically.
Oh,
you
yeah.
don't really know
Very.
Any of the European lifestyle. What got you into music?
Well, man, that's a tough question, actually.
That's usually the easiest one.
I know. I had to think about it now. I think I remember watching Back to the Future.
Yes.
Yeah, and the scene where Marty goes up to play at the prom because uh-huh. the dude's hand is broken or something from the trunk, and then he just shreds a solo over top of a blues song. I was like, that looks cool. He looks like he's having fun. So I wanted to pick up some music, and my dad bought I think it was like a Fleeland guitar or mm-hmm. something like that. It was supposed to be like a classical string guitar, I didn't know that, so I'd string it with steel strings.
Yeah.
Didn't end well. Kind of snapped in half.
Yeah, those are a little wider bridges, I think, for strings.
Yeah.
But at least you got a start.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I learned a couple of things on there.
How old were you when all that happened?
I want to say I was around 9
okay.
or 10.
Got an early start.
Yeah, there was a break in between that and me actually pursuing mm-hmm. music more often because I think I'd quit for a while to try some other sports or something like
right.
that, like swimming, and it didn't work out, and kind of lazy. But
well, and rock and roll was calling your name.
Oh, yeah, the whole time.
It was just waiting for you to come of age, right?
Yeah, it just sat there in the corner waiting for me.
So you started tinkering on guitar.
Mm-hmm.
When did you discover your vocal ability? Because let me say this real quick. You're a phenomenal singer.
Thank you.
You've got some, you know, as they say, some pipes.
Yeah.
You know, your singing is really good. It's really powerful. And you've got good range. And I'll never forget the first time I saw you guys in Monday Nation. And I was just like, wow, that's a lead singer, you know?
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
When did you discover your singing voice?
The most recent one, probably about 2 years ago. It started out really bad.
You mean after puberty, right?
Well, I hit the early stages pretty quick. And then after that, it was just a big struggle to find out how to actually, I guess, properly
control
sing,
it, yeah.
air quotes, properly sing. But it was really rough in the beginning. It was like during the Teen Gem days. There's still videos somewhere. There's always some videos somewhere now.
Of course.
But of me.
Yeah, a lot of those blues jams were well documented. There was always somebody in the audience with pictures and video cameras and all that.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
So, obviously, you get started learning guitar. You start tinkering with singing. Were the two combined? Were you doing them both at the same time? And
actually, I started playing guitar for a band first, and then after we struggled for months to find a singer or somebody that had the time to do that stuff,
right.
and then they were just like, why don't you do it?
Yeah, let me
do a
try.
Decent job. Yeah. I was like, all right, I guess, why not? And then it sounded horrible, but, you know, it was better than what we could find at the time.
Learning process of it all.
Especially being kids, you know, so it's
right.
hard to find somebody who like just does that.
So what was the first kind of stuff you got into? Aside from, I mean, obviously Michael J. Fox in that movie portrayed a Chuck Berry song.
Yeah.
Which that movie came out in 1985, but that means you would have seen it in around 2000 something, right?
Somewhere there.
So, I mean, it had been out for years by the time you saw that. So that's not a bad introduction, is to be hearing Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
Even though it was in a movie that was, you know, made 30 years after Chuck Berry was even popular, but for you to discover it, you know, years and years later after that, that's a cool thing. What was your first wave of influences growing up?
Pretty much anything my dad had on CD. There was a lot of Deep Purple,
mm-hmm.
a lot of AC/DC,
nice.
A lot of
Dad did good.
Yeah, I think a little bit of Black Sabbath. But not very much.
When you say a little bit, does that mean just the Aussie or
no,
just the Dio?
No, it was a lot of the Dio.
Yeah.
I remember that.
That's cool.
Because
you can't go wrong with Black Sabbath.
Exactly.
Either way.
But after that, it was just like I got really into metal,
mm-hmm.
which was good and bad for me because all I wanted to do was play shreddy scales, but with half the talent of good artists that can actually do it.
Nah. I've heard you play. I mean, maybe back then it was rough, but now it's pretty good.
Yeah. A little less shred now, but a decent amount.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this was what? Teenage years? High school?
Yeah, that was my teenage years, coming out of middle school, going into high school,
mm-hmm.
and that was also while I was taking lessons with Bobby.
Okay, so you studied with Bobby.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, for a little while there, and then I started going to the teen jams.
Right, and that was, like
we
said earlier, like 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
So you were going to Teen Jam, which was part of the Kentucky Blues Society Blues Jams
right.
at Wawa, but they did have a separate
day
kind of event or set up for teens.
Yeah.
And it was an age-specific thing, right?
And yeah, so you guys were a young artist or something like that, right? You know?
And Bobby Baldwin was a part of that blues jam stuff, you know. Yeah. So obviously, you guys being students of his got to come in. I know Ben studied under him as well, right?
A lot of us actually did. Zach Smith, he was the host of the teen jams back then, and he studied under Baldwin. And I knew a ton of people back then that did. I can't name them off now, but
it is such a loss on that. But he did an incredible job of raising your generation of kids your age up with those lessons and the things that you guys got to learn and get from him. He now lives on through you guys. So I have to really applaud you for that, because for to have that from a Bobby Baldwin connection now that he's gone, that's special.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for Bobby and Teen Jam and the Kentucky Blues Society and all that, I don't know what would have been, you know.
But we've been playing in a dive bar somewhere.
Probably.
In front of five people. but that's a really cool story. And on a local Bowling Green music connection, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Because obviously Bobby comes from one generation of this music scene, and you guys were completely the future.
Yeah.
And you met, and he passed on something to you, and now you guys get to carry it on. So that's really, really cool. And as far as capturing that story on a local Bowling Green music podcast, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So going into the teen jams and everything, was that like your introduction to playing live?
Yeah.
Was that like your first band kind of thing?
Yeah, that was, it was the first time I got to play live, and I thought I'd be a lot more nervous than I was. But I found out maybe like a year or two later that I get less nervous when there's more people.
Right.
Because you feel like you don't have to please certain people. You feel like, okay.
Well, I think it's an energy thing.
Yeah, that too.
It's almost like the room gets filled with energy. Everybody's excited. And when they're actually looking at the stage and interested in it, that helps a lot too.
Yeah. It's hard to pull them sometimes.
But you have a good stage presence now, and obviously that may come from your time then and almost like your upbringing, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, woodshed kind of learning the craft thing, which is, I say that a lot in these episodes.
Oh, that's fine.
But that's how it's referred to, is, you know, you're learning your craft.
It is. It's just, I don't know.
I don't know. There's something, the word craft sounds like you're making swords or something. I've never really thought
we're
going to
forge some
music.
Yes. Forging a fire.
So how long did you go to those? I mean, was it a short-lived thing, or was it?
It was a good while.
Yeah?
I think it was up until, well, I personally kept going to them even after they stopped being at Wawa's, because then they started doing them at Mellow Mushroom.
Yeah.
Well, but it was more stripped down.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
more acoustic, you know, the stage.
Especially
there.
Especially if it was inside.
Yeah.
Did they ever do those outside on the patio?
They did a couple of times, but there was like,
weather permitting?
Yeah, weather permitting, and there was hardly any space, because, you know, you still got to make room for people who want to eat pizza, drink beer, you know.
Right.
It's just great over there, actually. but I just remember the stage being as small as this table, it felt like.
It really is. And it's not really a stage. It's more of a platform to go from the dining room to the bar.
Yeah, it's just an extension of the ramp that goes up there. But
you would think they'd have more success if they'd build like an actual stage onto the like patio walkway, but
yeah,
I don't know. That's for another time. but I think a lot of people have had good shows at Mellow Mushroom. And speaking of Mellow, we are at Mellow Matt's Music and More
once again.
I absolutely love taping these episodes here.
Yeah.
You can't get any more local music than this.
That's true.
So you do that for a while. When did you get into your first band?
Not very long after I started going to Teen Jam. That was when I was hitting it off with like Kendrick, and we started playing with a couple different guys that were from my high school. And Ben and I and Ed all went to the same high school, too. Just Ed was a couple of years behind us. But, and then eventually, I saw them play enough times. They were actually playing with Ian Harper.
Yes.
Which I remember listening
to
the
Colonel.
Podcast. Yeah, the Colonel, Ian Harper. And I remember hearing those guys. I'm like, that kid can absolutely shred. I was super jealous. But So eventually, they disbanded, and I think, I don't know. I don't know. I think I was a little bit nervous to get them on board, because I think Kendrick wanted to. I don't remember anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I was
a lot happens when you're young.
And, yeah, exactly.
You know, but
you don't remember all of it. But then we started doing that as a small group, and we started covering a bunch of songs from like Audioslave, Foo Fighters, and stuff like that at first. And then we tried writing some stuff, and I wasn't great at it, you know.
But this is after the first like band. You said you played guitar in Mo Pie.
Yeah.
Was it actually called Mo Pie, or was the part of it? Because when I saw Mo Pie, you weren't in it.
Yeah, that was maybe a year or two after I left Mo Pie. Mo Pie came after this, which was the Teen Jam band.
Right.
But one thing that came out of that first iteration, I guess, with me, Ben, and Ed, was we have a song called Grain, and it's on our most recent album now, Monday Nation, and it's
Primal State.
Yeah, that
comes in stores now.
Yeah, exactly. That song actually came from that era.
Cool.
Of us playing
that's
together.
Cool. I mean, to capture that and keep it alive.
Super old song. Yeah.
And I think I played that song with you guys, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
So you were in Mo Pie's like first makeup, so to speak.
I think it was like the second or third.
Prior to you getting into that, you were already jamming with Ben and Ed, or am I miscrossing those two?
Yeah, prior to me joining Mo Pie, I think Mo Pie had started while we were doing the whole Teen Jam things.
Okay.
But the
pre-formation of what has become your band Monday Nation now was you and Ben and Ed, the brothers, obviously, and that was just what, jamming, having fun? Did you ever have a name? Did you play out?
we were called The Facient.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it'd be like your first band.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who was the drummer for that?
Kendrick Brent.
Okay. Yeah, so it was the three of you.
Yeah, it was the three of us and then Kendrick, and we had played all those covers, written a couple of originals here and there. It was just like an on and off project type thing. You know, you're young, you do
testing
things.
The waters, really. I mean,
You're just kind of trying to do something, but then figuring out what you actually want to do through doing that. I keep hitting this table. But then after that was when I started to do more of the acoustic stuff.
Okay.
And also more of the blues jam stuff, because, you know, I'd gotten so used to going to the teen jams. I was like, well, what do I do now? You know, they're just kind of acoustic stuff at Mellow Mushroom now, but I still want to go play. And then I went to a couple of blues jams, met some people through there, and then ended up somehow joining Mo Pie.
Interesting.
And, yeah. No.
I don't think I caught the story when I've talked to Ian before of, like, the formation of that. You know, he just kind of talked about the band in general, but I didn't get details of who was in it at first and who was in it at the end, but, you know.
Well, I remember.
But I did know it came from that blues jam, teen jam kind of stuff, you know, and I knew that.
It was like a big mashup of the blues jams and teen jams, really. So I remember Trey Farley. He's another local artist around here.
Really talented guy,
too. He's awesome.
Oh, he's amazing.
And you think he's good at guitar, and then you listen to him play bass, and you're like, oh, okay. That's what he actually does, you know?
Yeah.
Like, well, he does it all, but you know what I mean.
He does,
That was his main shtick. Gosh, I'm trying to remember the iterations now, because there was like four or five different.
But obviously you were in it.
Yeah, at one
point.
And
it was somewhat kind of brief, in a way.
Yeah, I think it was maybe like 6 months to 9 months or something like that. We got to do a lot of cool stuff. You know, we played a couple of shows here around town. I remember we played Kentucky Music Company, which was cool. You know, it's
and you said that you were part of the band when they went to Memphis, right?
Yeah, I think they went a couple of times.
Yeah.
But we ended up going to Memphis and playing at, oh my gosh.
It was at the IBC, but I mean, what bar do you remember, like, where you played?
It was,
because I know Beale Street basically just turns into a giant
conglomeration of blues.
It's like a humongous, like, the whole street, all the venues, all the hotel venues. It just becomes like this gigantic battle of the bands, but there's no battle. Everybody's just playing.
Yeah, exactly. I hate myself for blanking on it, because it's like one of the most famous venues and, there.
Oh, well, there's so many.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, it was just a big glob of music going on, and I'm just like, oh, cool. I'm 17. This is awesome.
Yeah.
But
nice introduction to traveling and playing in like places like Memphis and walking the streets of where legends, you know.
Yeah.
That's cool to do, you know.
It was insane.
Well, that's a cool experience to have at a young age.
Oh, it's freezing, though.
Yeah.
Freezing cold.
Yeah, when does that happen? In, like, February?
Yeah, January, it's like February. January or February. I was like, oh, God.
Isn't that weird? You would think Memphis, Tennessee is always going to be 102. But no, not in January.
No.
It gets pretty cold.
Frigid.
So you do that for a bit, and then you go back to jamming with Ben and Ed, and
I think I did some more acoustic stuff
right,
at first.
You did the solo stuff in that area.
And then I remember this one instance. I saw another band playing. I can't even remember now, but I just saw it and I was like, you know, I want to play in a band. Like, it upset me that I wasn't in a band, so I was like, I just got an itch for it.
You missed the. I think it's cool to work alone.
Yeah,
but you really miss the energy.
Yeah.
And the collaboration aspect of it.
Yeah. And plus, I knew a couple of guys who wanted to play some really rockin' tunes. So I'm like, why not go for that?
Right. And that's what you did.
Yeah.
When did this go into the formation of what is now Mundane Nation?
Yes, it did, actually. They were going to play with Trey Farley for a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. I think he had offered he'd offered to play a couple of shows here and there with them to just get out and do something.
Right.
And then I think, I can't remember if it was Ed or Ben who had said something like, hey, you want to do this with us? Because, you know, like, it's been years, you know, why not go for it again? I was just like, all right, that's fine, I guess. You know, yeah. I've been itching to play out and wanting to play rock music and all that good stuff, right. You know.
So, and you all already kind of tested the waters with each other.
Exactly. So we knew how it went to some degree because we were like 14 at the time and 15 and, you know, hormones.
But they weren't bringing in a stranger at that point. They knew you.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they just kind of probably sat around one day and said, you know what?
Yeah.
He's the guy. We need to reach out to him and see if he wants to do it.
Yeah. And then.
So when did that get rolling? Like, what year was that?
I was right when I started college, so around 2014, 2015, somewhere around there.
And the first lineup of Mundane Nation,
yeah,
who was in it?
That was me, Ben, and Ed, and then we had a drummer named Isaiah Coit.
Yes.
Yeah. We had played with him for a while, and schedules got busy and stuff like that, and we had to just go with somebody else at that point, and then we went through a dry spell. I remember testing out so many drummers. We've been through a lot of drummers. We chew them up, spit them out. I don't know what we do to them, you know.
Well, a lot of us are old. And so
the ones that are interested in playing what we want to do.
It seems like a lot of drummers that are your all's age were more of hobby people. They weren't looking to really dive into a hardworking band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, a lot of them that I've met that are your all's age, it just seems that way to me.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a few out there that are dedicated, but I have yet to really see them unless they're already in something.
Right.
But, I first saw you guys at Dublin's Irish Pub.
Yeah.
And I would say that was around 2016.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
And Todd Hogan was the obviously the sound man there. And he had some dates with Despite the Fallen coming up. They had a lot of shows booked. And he was like, hey, I need somebody to fill in for me while I'm gone playing these nights on like Fridays and Saturdays, you know. So I got to run sound at Dublin's for like a month. And you guys were one of the first bands I ran sound for. And I was completely blown away. I was just like, holy crap, these guys are good. So it wasn't just the musicianship. At that age, you guys were super beyond anything I could remember meeting guys that age, you know. But the music selection was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
My era of stuff. You're up there playing Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam. Yeah. The whole grunge kind of movement, but you also threw in some really cool
things like Tool.
Yeah.
And what? Did I already mention Rage Against the Machine? No, I'm trying to think what else you did.
We did all that plus like Stuntable Pilots.
Yeah. Which that still falls in that 90s grunge area, but to me, if it's Seattle, it's what the media calls grunge.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you all just did a lot of stuff. Oh, Velvet Revolver, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, we play Slither.
So it was about not only musically what you were into, but vocally what you could, like, get, you know, and obviously you can sing like those guys.
So. Sometimes I couldn't, and it was hard, and I felt like it was always a challenge to try and do stuff like that.
But I had never seen a cover band locally do those songs from that era that well, and you guys were, like, spot on. I mean, it was really impressive. So that was my experience and introduction to you, so to speak.
Thank you. Well, it was definitely a good time.
It was a good show. Would that have been your original drummer at that point?
No, I think... No, it wasn't. That was when we were playing with a guy named Ian Crow.
Oh, yes, that's
and
right.
And he now lives in Lexington.
Okay.
Great drummer, phenomenal.
But right after I saw you guys there, he had left the band.
Yeah.
And you got Jake Ritchie.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jake was actually in the band for quite a while.
It was supposed to be like a temporary thing while we searched for other drummers.
But that's a common thing.
Yeah.
You know, it just happens. And but Jake comes in, and Jake's been mentioned in several podcasts up to this point.
Yeah, he's a great drummer.
Great drummer. And I'm really hoping I can nail down an interview with him too.
Oh yeah.
But he comes in to Monday Nation as a temporary, but is actually kind of there for a while. How long was that? I mean, obviously it's 2019 now, so
I want to say
Jake
was
in the band for at least 2 years or something.
A year and a half, somewhere between that. I'm really horrible with like dates
pretty decent amount of time. And you guys did just recently release a full length like
album.
Self-released album.
Yeah.
And Jake is the drummer on that.
Yeah, he's actually also the producer on that we recorded it in his basement.
Right.
Yeah, which was really cool.
That was very cool.
Yeah. So we got some drumming and we squeezed an album out of him in a year. So, you know, it was great. I'm really glad we were able to do that because, I don't know, like everything about that album was self-made. Mm-hmm. The album artwork, all that stuff.
And it's all original.
Yes.
It's very much your guys' sound, your songs, and like you said earlier about grain, it's like the merger of the past with newer modern stuff. So you actually captured like the history of what your band has in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, it's like the chronology?
Something of that nature.
Yeah.
But it's a really good album, and I can say that because I wasn't given a copy of it. I was sent the files
right
before the record came out. Jake had already decided to leave, or he just basically was like, I can't do this
just
on the scale of what you guys want to do. And you guys reached out to me and said, look, we just really want to play a show and get our feet wet again. It's been a while. We need to get back into this while we're auditioning drummers.
Oh yeah.
And so I guess Ed just knew I could do that kind of stuff.
Right.
So he sent me, I think, 7 of your originals and then the list of covers, which was choice stuff, grade A stuff for me.
Just take a pick from this 4-hour list
of
songs.
Yeah, you guys gave me a huge list and was like, well, I know this, and this.
Yeah,
and so we did one show together.
Yeah.
We had one rehearsal to go over the originals for the most part.
Right.
And then we'd played a show together at Dublin's. And I had the time of my life.
Oh, yeah.
And when I left there that night, the offer was kind of there. It wasn't really, like, written in stone, like, hey, you know, the offer's yours if you want it kind of thing. But I knew that you guys were looking for a full-time drummer.
Oh, yeah.
And they kind of hinted at the idea of it's yours if you want it in a way, you know, and I went home that night and really had to sit down and think because I was like, I'd love to do it. But we're about 20 years apart.
Yeah.
So, and I'm relating to Jake on this, is you can come into situations like that and musically it's a good fit. And I knew we would have had a good time and I would have been able to handle what you threw at me. But I also knew I was like more of your dad than I was your drummer bandmate. So I had to walk. But it was a hard decision. I'll be honest with you. It really was, because I had such a good time that show. And I got the album, you know, and I listened to it a lot. And it was a tough choice for me.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this, man, that show was great.
It was an awesome
Everybody
night.
That was there loved it, and I had a really good time. And I appreciate you all letting me come in and do that.
Thanks for helping us out.
But I knew that it kind of helped you all just kind of stay fresh and on your toes in a way, too.
Very much, yeah.
You had just put out this record, but you couldn't really play it. You weren't able to go out and perform these songs, you know. So I got to help a little bit. But then my friend, Justin Woods, came to audition. And Justin played for me as Captain Dean. He played a few shows with me, and I love Justin. I met Justin years ago, and he came up to audition for me, and he was still in high school. And he was like, you could tell he was good, but he wasn't quite there yet. And I basically was like, man, you've got it, but it's just about a year or two away, so just keep practicing. And I know you'll find something.
And I remember you telling us that.
It's
and
true.
When you
and
told me that, I was blown away. I was like, no, this guy's been playing for like at least 12 years. Like, no.
Well, he came up to the audition for me when I put out my first album. And that was in 2013 or 2014.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he seriously was like 18 years old. He was still in high school. And I was like, man, you're good, you're cool, but you're just not there yet. Yeah. I need somebody solid and in the pocket and blah, blah, blah. Years go by. I lose contact with him and everything, because he was one of those that just didn't have Facebook and nothing.
Just disappeared.
But I finally found him again, and I reached out to him. I was like, hey, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I've been playing, you know, practicing, getting good. And he came back and actually played in my band unrehearsed. I sent him the songs and said, I got a show booked. Just show up. And he showed up on stage at the A-Frame and nailed it.
Yeah,
played 10 songs like we had rehearsed them.
Yeah, he learned our stuff really fast.
Justin Woods is a fantastic drummer, and when I had to take that decision of not taking your all's offer, and you all had already talked to him too.
Yeah,
but I also kind of suggested that I was basically saying, if anyone is the perfect fit for your guys' band. Yeah. Not only musically, but age-wise, same personality, so to speak. It's him.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, Justin comes in, and he's in the band now.
Super hardworking, learns so quick, and I'm just like, oh my God, we have something here now.
When you think of a drummer, to me, Justin Woods is the definition of what a drummer is. Hardworking. Does his homework, practices, and constantly working on getting better and improving what he knows and what he's good at and so on and so forth.
Every show we've played so far with him, it's been something different.
So how long has he been? I mean, I played that show with you guys it was like late last summer, like summer of 2018.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I think
early fall, but right after that, he basically came in and accepted the offer and joined the band.
Yeah.
So how many shows have you all done since Justin came in, and
man,
what's been happening since the band has been locked in?
I think we played like 4 or 5 shows. I may be way off because, again, I can't remember dates. I can't remember numbers. But
you need to work on that.
I do. It's probably important somewhere.
You need a manager.
Yeah. I just need like a chronological journal of
book.
Yeah. Oh, it's like a Facebook or something. No, I gotta get better about that. But we've played quite a few shows with him, and since he's joined, every time we get a new drummer and we write some music or we have some music written, they change it to kind of fit their stuff. Of course,
I mean
that's how it is. If you get
it's
a new singer,
stick to
it's gonna
the
be
core
different.
Of the song. But obviously, when it comes to fills and changes from verses to choruses, you don't have to necessarily mimic what the other drummer did, but it does help to at least stay in the same ballpark, so to speak.
Yeah, as long as you're in the same realm, you're good.
Yeah.
You know, like
make it a smooth transition.
Yeah, we even told him that. We're like, just do what you want to do. If it sounds good, it's going to sound good, and if it doesn't, then
but he's
we'll...
the kind of guy that would learn the song, play it, and if he made a slight mistake or just couldn't quite get it, he would go home and work on it.
Yeah,
and that's what he does. Yeah, and he's really good at that stuff.
Yeah, but it's been really good. Yeah. We're working on getting some more shows lined up for the spring and summer and the fall after that. Right. We're getting a little better about getting ahead of the curve now.
I mean, you guys are all what? In your early 20s?
Early 20s, yeah.
So you've got a ways to go, but you're off to a good start.
Oh, yeah.
But I know Justin recently graduated from Western. Oh, yeah. Are you still in college?
I have
college,
a couple months left. Yeah? Yeah, I have a couple months left. Ben has finished his college. Ed is still in it. He's
now, there's something interesting about Ben. He's not only an incredible guitar player who also studied with Bobby Baldwin.
Yeah.
He has, like, the state record for, what is it?
Him and Ed.
Is it
both,
the long jump?
Pole vaulting.
Pole vaulting.
Yeah.
That I heard this story from somebody, and I was like, really? Yeah, he holds the Kentucky state record.
I think Ed actually came in a couple years after that and beat him out.
So they're competitive brothers.
Oh, you know. They're that's brothers, really of course
cool.
They are.
Yeah, but that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, on top of that, engineering students. So
yeah.
I'm just like, all right.
Yeah,
I'll
right.
just be this guy over here. I'll be the singer, yeah.
Well, you guys are definitely what I would say is just a solid rock and roll band. I mean, you're not really, I mean, obviously your influences show when you play your cover songs that you all do live. But one thing I noticed about you guys, and you were doing it when I met you, is you were really good about the balance. You play a few covers, but you then throw in an original.
Yeah.
And you all even said to me at one point, yeah, we do that, and we notice that the crowd doesn't really, you know, leave the floor when there's a song playing they don't recognize, because your all's songs actually blend in with the songs you're playing.
Yeah.
So to the untrained ear, they might not know if that's your song or someone else's.
Yeah, I've made it a big point to actually, like, point out before every original song, like, hey, guys, we're going to play an original next. We wrote this. just so I can make sure people kind of know. And, like, you can get it on this album, too, that we just put out.
Yeah.
They're like, wow, an album.
You
I'm
can
like,
buy it right now.
Yeah, we have it in the car.
Well, since the album came out, how has everything been going as far as, I mean, obviously it's based on like shows and all that stuff.
But it's been easier to kind of book shows, I feel like. I've been super busy with like school and working, and for a while I didn't work, but you know, other things. Ed has been taking over a lot of that responsibility, and he's been doing a great job. It's a lot easier to reach out to people in venues now that we have an album, because we can just be like, hey, instead of saying, hey, listen to this video with subpar quality of us doing a cover of this song. Instead, now it's like, here, have this recording of us playing our original songs.
Exactly. And it's it's well done. It's a very well done record. And obviously, Jake Ritchie playing drums on it.
Oh, yeah.
Great drummer.
Yeah.
So you got solid drums out of him, and you got a great recording out of him.
Oh, yeah.
So for your first, like, independent release album, so to speak, you did a really good job.
Yeah. And towards the end there, we kind of had to start rushing a little bit. It was towards when we, you know, you record drums, bass, guitar, and then vocals, right? So towards the end there, we started getting a little bit. We set ourselves a deadline to try and release it in the fall. And we were starting to get closer to that deadline, but I was going to leave the country soon to go visit some family for a couple of weeks. Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, well, I got to nail these vocal parts, got to knock them out. And it took me forever because I am so bad about beating myself up when it comes to that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But even now people might notice that the volume of the vocals are a little bit lower than most modern music you hear nowadays. That was partly to do with making it sound like an older record.
True, but
at the same time,
also,
it was also like
kind of blending your voice in with the instruments as an instrument.
Too. Yeah.
So to me, that's a big thing for me is when you hear that.
Yeah, I didn't want to be out front. I never did. It was an accident.
But you
that
do
I became
play.
A singer.
I mean, you're not just the lead singer. You also play guitar in the band.
Yeah.
So there's songs that's kind of a half and half, I would think. You play on a few.
Actually, on all the originals, I think I play guitar with two.
Oh, just two?
No, like as well. I play guitar on all the originals, but it's mostly, I think, like a texture thing.
Right. Well, I guess because live, you do put the guitar down to sing.
Yeah, some like covers.
Lead singer mode.
Yeah, yeah, when I have to hop off the stage. And yeah.
So I guess maybe you get confused on what's what, you know, live. But
right.
I didn't realize if you played guitar on all the originals or not.
I think at this point, that's we're trying to kind of write songs to have me put down the guitar a little bit, just because obviously it's easier for me to just sing instead of doing both. I don't know. It's really hard. We keep trying. I keep like, oh yeah, there's something I could put underneath that with this guitar or something like that. But
well, Ben's a phenomenal guitar player. Absolutely. So, I mean, it's almost kind of like,
right.
Sometimes you just don't need to play, you know.
Oh yeah,
if you don't have to, you don't have to.
And I've been trying to do that a little bit lately, where I don't play as much during the songs live.
Well, they're really musical. Like, they're not only extremely talented, you know, guitar and bass players, but they're brothers.
Yeah.
So they've got that connection. They can read each other's mind in a way. I have a brother that I grew up with, and we played music. And you don't have to talk a lot. You can just kind of instantly know, like when a riff starts, you just kind of know what to do, and they don't ever stop you and go, no, play it like this. Like, they can just instantly kind of know what to do.
Yeah, when it starts flowing, it's great.
So that's got to be a good, you know, connection to have with the working partners of that nature.
When they write something and I have to come in and learn it or something like that, they'll be playing through it, trying to show it to me, but they're taking it places that I never thought about, and then they'll be like, it's like they're speaking their own language.
They really are.
It's really interesting. I want to say, since I've been doing it this long with them, I kind of picked up on a few of it, a few of the words and descriptions. Like, you play the doodly doop after the dum dum dum. But no,
and
it's,
that's how music is spoken.
Exactly. That's who needs sheet music.
Exactly.
But
you
no,
don't.
It's crazy.
But that's a cool, you know, thing to have with them. And so obviously you've kind of just get to be a part of that process and watching them work together.
Yeah.
And honestly, man, I mean, Jake Ritchie is a great drummer.
Oh, yeah.
The drummer I saw you guys originally with was really good, solid drummer.
Oh, yeah.
But I honestly just feel like Justin Woods was the right fit. He's musical.
Oh, yeah.
He's very percussive. He's solid, and he's in the pocket, but he can also kind of dance around it.
Yeah.
He was the right fit for you guys.
He's got an incredible range of music that he listens to and plays
along with,
too.
And he's really cool about posting video. He's not afraid to shoot video of him playing along with songs that he loves at home. And
yeah, I think that's how Ed saw him first.
Yeah,
and
probably.
Around the same time I'd seen him through something like that,
one
of the Facebook pages or something.
Mm-hmm.
That have a bunch of musicians posting stuff.
But you guys have definitely, I feel like, and I said this that day I was leaving your rehearsal. I was like, I'm going to do this one show, basically, but you needed to talk to this guy, you know, and luckily it worked out. And what's on the horizon? What do you see coming after, say, graduation and everything for you?
I really want to focus more on actually pushing some music and doing that.
Do you have any plans to do anything to capture anything new with Justin on drums so that you can get the new the band as now?
We are writing some songs now. Obviously, it's a big struggle with everybody's changing schedules now. Like I said, Ben had graduated college. He's got a new job now.
Right.
You know, he works like 40 hours a week, which is fine. You know, like, it's just, it's tough to get along with that stuff whenever I'm working nights and mornings at my job. Ed works at Starbucks, and as of now, and you know, it's just crazy scheduling wise.
It's good. I mean, at your all's age, it's a good time.
It's a
you
great time.
You can actually juggle all that, you know.
Yeah,
trust me, you can.
At one point,
it gets harder.
At one point, I was working about 40 plus hours a week doing the school thing and the band thing, and it was insanely.
I mean, you guys actually put in the work. Like, you don't practice once a month, you know. You actually get together a lot.
There have been times where it's been once a month, but that's just, you know, getting schedules right. And
well, plus you went through the whole drummer thing.
Yeah.
But ever since Justin's gotten the band, it seems like you're pretty constant on social media, your posts are
That's thanks to Ed, really.
Up to par and,
but we're getting stuff in the works and trying to plan out stuff. So we got, obviously, we're writing new songs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We're going to be working on a, I don't know if this is like hush-hush or anything. I don't think so.
Well, this airs much later than the day we're speaking. So,
well, we'll probably make an announcement by then. Then we're working on a music video.
Cool.
With 254 Productions.
Yes.
Yes. And that's
Brandon.
Brandon from Memory, you know. And we just, I think the next step is really trying to network through a lot of the musicians around here, because we've been, I don't want to say shy about it, but we've been busy, and you know,
well,
it's
played,
easy to make excuses.
You've
like
played some good shows. Obviously at Dublin's you can run the whole night, but when you do play, like I caught you guys recently at Tidballs, and I was really glad I did, because I haven't seen you live with Justin.
Yeah.
And so I was, it was a proud moment for me to see him finally in something that was, you know,
like his,
working and active, and to see him on stage at Tidballs,
it was awesome.
That meant a lot to me, because it's almost like a proud parent moment, so to speak, thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because he's younger than me, and he really we spent a lot of time together, you know, a decent amount of time, just as drummers, talking drums. And I took him over to Jimmy Lewis house one night and did shop talk and all that stuff, you know.
Oh yeah.
But he's a good dude, and I have a lot of respect for him, and he has always said the same about me. So it was a proud moment for me to see him almost in that graduating stage of going from playing around and doing this and that to finally being in a band, and a band with substance and a future ahead of it. So I'm hoping the future is bright for you guys.
Oh, for sure.
I don't see how it wouldn't be. Unless you all just basically gave up.
I mean, we're just going crazy a little bit right now. But, you know, I'd finished some of my schoolwork now. You know, it's just I want to get back into doing more with the band, because I've been slacking. But
with that mentality, you will.
Yeah.
So it's pretty safe to say that you guys are going to be fine.
Oh, yeah. And we're, we're just working hard, really.
Well, before we get to the point of wrapping all this up, who are you a fan of these days? Who do you go out and see? Or are you just so bogged down with finals?
No. I try to make it a point to go out and see some people. So, like,
I mean, I know you guys team up with a lot of bands. Obviously, I've seen you with Despite the Fallen.
Yeah, we've gone and played with a lot of bands that we, and more so now, we're trying to play with more bands that we would go out to see and stuff like that. Because, you know, with like influences and sort of like sounds. I really love going to see Despite the Fallen play. Love going to see Memory. I haven't seen them in a while. I think since the Soakie Fair of last year or a year before
that. Well, they had just recently added a new fourth member, I believe, a new guitarist to the band. So maybe they're woodshedding and rediscovering their sound too.
Yeah.
But Memory is a really good band.
Yeah, they're great. And on top of that, you know, with the whole reaching out thing, we're getting to discover bands like Chout from Chicago.
Yeah. And you guys did a show with them.
Yeah. We got them down to Louisville to play.
That's cool.
I wouldn't call it meeting in the middle, but, you know.
Not too bad, though.
It was a 6-hour drive for them.
Saved them an hour and a half.
Right. Exactly. And we heard of a band in California, Joyous Wolf. They're making their rounds now. Obviously, around here, we got Kiss Kiss Bang. Yep. We got Black Gold. We got all these bands around here, and we need to.
And again, like, those are bands that in the rock family very much on the same page with what you guys do.
Yeah.
So those are good pairings.
Oh yeah, for
so
sure.
So I could see why teaming up with those bands would be a good fit.
Oh yeah. Plus we get to share some fans and
it's always nice. What it's all about, you know, grassroots, keeping it down home and kind of building a fan base, you know.
Also playing awesome shows with these guys, you know. It's just, I don't know, it's one of those things you learn from each other too.
Yeah.
But
you guys have been around here for, you know, like you said, what, 4-5 years at this point, so to speak?
Yeah, as Mundane Nation. Yeah. About 4 years.
You've played
years.
Dublin's Irish Pub a lot. You've played Tidballs.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played Rockies?
No, I think we tried to get in there a year or two ago.
Yeah.
Just at the time, I think it was also like, we're trying, but then drummer falls
you
through.
You played Spillway, right?
Yeah, that was a while back. You were a judge on one of the Battle of the Bands there,
too. Right. I forgot about that. You were in that, too. Yeah, there were 10 bands there that night.
Oh, man, that must have been insane.
That was a good show, though. And again, I mean, I think it was around that time, so to speak, that I saw you there, and then I saw you again at Dublin's. Probably about the same time frame, I believe.
We actually used to play at a place called The Brewing Company.
Yeah.
Which closed down maybe 3 years ago or something
like that. It's been a while.
But yeah, we used to... That was when we were first starting out playing live shows, and we played four-hour gigs.
Yeah.
It was insane.
But it's, again, like, your old set list is awesome. I kept it.
It's
like
huge.
It was. It's still in my snare case, like, because I was really proud of... Because I grew up a huge fan of, like, Pearl Jam, and you guys played Even Flow.
Yeah.
And you played Wood by Alice in Chains, and, like, these are... Those are my songs of teenage songs. You know, I grew up with those bands, and so that meant a lot to me to be able to play them with quality musicians that actually played them accurately.
Well, I really appreciate you helping us out because we were itching to play, like we mentioned, you know.
Yeah, and it was a tough offer to turn down, but unfortunately I had to. But my loss is Justin Wood's gain.
Yeah, exactly.
But I kind of owed it to Justin, too, because he had joined my band, and my band fell apart, and he was kind of left dangling out there in the field, and I was like, hey, you're young, go, I'll help you find something. And so I kind of feel like I might have had a little bit of...
Definitely helped me kind of lean more towards that direction, too, because I was like, you know, yeah, he could be a good fit. And then you're like, well, he's only been playing for so-and-so years, you know, he did this. I'm just like, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
I was like, no way.
It's true. And I mean, but, you know, his story is very similar to all of your old stories.
Yeah.
You started young, and you really cut your teeth and got going at young ages, you know, and that really just sums it all up. So I feel like Mundane Nation today is the lineup that it is, and has probably got a pretty bright future ahead of it.
Yeah.
So
it's incredible. It's been a very long journey. Yeah, and I can't wait to see what keeps going, you know.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to see either, because I'm not only a friend of you guys, but I'm also a fan.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm looking forward to what is in store, and I really appreciate you taking time to do this.
No, thank you for having me.
And is there anything I missed before we wrap it up? Anything you need to say or cover or talk about?
Oh, geez.
See, I love that part.
Yeah,
because
everyone
gets stumped.
These are my favorite parts.
So what I miss?
I don't know. I think that about covers all of it.
Yep.
Obviously, I can't think off the top of my head something that may have dated back like 8 years ago. But
yeah.
No, I mean, Primal State's out on every platform.
Exactly. And where can everyone listening find Mundane Nation's music?
You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on our Facebook. There's a couple of other digital outlets that I'm blanking out on.
So it's digitally available.
Yes.
You also did print hard copies.
We do. Yeah, we do have some hard copies left of our first batch.
Do you only sell them at the shows? Are they available in stores, like here at Mellow Matt's Music and More on 1200
be.
Small House?
They
there?
Should be.
maybe after this podcast, you'll
I should probably go do some networking, yeah. We have physical copies that we sell at shows, and I need to work on getting us a website started up. So that we, Ed has been mailing it to some people who have messaged the page. So that's one thing. If you live far away and can't make it to a show,
you can actually order it through you guys.
Yeah, you can just message us, and we'll see what we can do.
And you've also got swag, of course. You've
got
some cool
we
t-shirts.
Got some,
I
we
got the
some
green
t-shirts.
T-shirt.
We have a green and a red
I
shirt.
I got the green one.
With the little
happy about
the
that.
Monkey face off of the album is on there with Mundane Nation printed on it.
Mundane Nation, as far as the year 2019 goes, as far as the Bowling Green music scene goes, which has a very deep history to it, you guys are very much part of now, and I hope 20 years from now people look back on this name just like they do on many, many bands that have come from this area.
I do too. Yeah.
Some are still around and a lot of them are not.
Right.
And I think that Mundane Nation's name should hold up over time if you guys keep it up. So
thank you.
Keep it up.
Oh, we got
and
we got
thank
a fire
you for doing
it,
what you do.
Thank you.